culture, discipline, accountability.
Mistreatment, misrepresentation.
Knowledge is power, y'all.
There has to be accountability.
This pandemic of toxic work culture and mistreatment has got to stop.
The podcast for federal employees by federal employees.
What's up? What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Fed Up. I'm your host, Ron Speakman. Before we get started, I just wanted to quickly take this moment to share this disclaimer with you all to provide more clarity that myself or any of my guests on Fed Up do not speak for or speak or act on behalf of any federal agency or union, specifically the ones we are talking about within this episode of Fed Up. And all opinions or views expressed and or experiences shared on this podcast are those of the individual speaking and do not represent the opinions or views of the federal agency or union that are discussed in this episode, nor does anyone on this podcast, officially or unofficially, represent the federal agency or union being discussed within this episode of Fed Up. Any guest speaking on this podcast are doing so off the clock, off duty, and out of uniform on their own personal time. And again, do not represent the federal agency or union discussed on this episode of Fed Up. Having said that, we have a special guest on the show today, as our guest today is a doctor from the state of Florida who has been treating federal workers with their on-the-job work injuries since 1998, indirectly speaking, meaning their focus wasn't on federal employees solely. However, this doctor started helping us federal employees directly since 2017 through the company that he started just for us federal employees, which is called FedHurt, and has offices across this country in many different states, including Puerto Rico, and whose sole mission is to create the largest provider network specializing in the treatment of all injured federal employees, as FedHurt provides continuous case management and medical treatment throughout the life cycle of an individual's claim. They also provide medical care without an approved claim while simultaneously assisting claimants with registering their claim and getting their claim accepted with OWCP, in addition to all their facilities being registered with the Department of Labor and OWCP, and all of their providers having licensed medical doctors, physical therapists, and physical therapy assistants, all of which we will get into here in this episode and more, as I feel this information is vital for you all to have while making a decision on where to go for treatment, as this is but one of just a few options we have as a federal employee to choose from to go to when we are injured on the job, as they are well-versed in OWCP, who know the language needed to write medical narrative reports and help get our claims accepted and the rights afforded to us federal workers. And remember, knowledge is power. So sit back and listen to this in-depth conversation between my guest and I as I both vet this doctor and ask the questions that need to be asked for you all to have the information needed to, again, make the best decision should you ever find yourself injured on the job. So without further ado, let's welcome in our guest, Dr. Robert Custin, CEO of FedHurt, whose main office is headquartered out of the great Sunshine State of Florida. Dr. Custin, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Ron. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to connect with both you and your members on this worthwhile endeavor that we're getting ready to start this morning. And I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Absolutely. Again, thank you for being here with us today, Doc. We greatly appreciate your time. So much to get into here. So I'll start off by asking you if you wouldn't mind telling us about yourself and your background. Tell us how long you were a doctor for and how you began providing care for federal employees. Now, I know I spoke in the intro on indirectly and directly providing treatment and care for us, but if you could expand on that as well when talking about your background for us, that'd be great, as I feel it's important not only for the people to hear about you as a person and a professional, but also where I want to take this interview moving forward.
Well, that's a double-pronged question, Ron. I've been in practice since 1998, although I am no longer actively seeing patients. I do provide oversight for all of the clinics within our network. And so it's an interesting story regarding how I got started in the federal space. It was sometime around 2016, 2017, when I had multiple locations specializing in personal injury. And after a while, I just was no longer satisfied or interested in doing that kind of work. And one of the marketing specialists that I was employing had suggested to me, why don't I think about federal workman's comp? And truthfully, at the time, I had no idea that there was a difference between state comp and federal workman's comp. And I did some research and I determined that there was not a lot of people in that space. And being able to provide care for a much needed segment of the population was interesting to me. So I did some research and I determined how to navigate all things OWCP. And in 2017, we opened up our first clinic in the Fort Lauderdale area and began seeing patients immediately. And that was the beginning of working with the federal community. So sometime around 2017 is when we really started taking care of people that are injured federal workers.
Thank you for sharing that with us. It seems that you are a blue-collar worker and personality by nature. Is that a fair assessment of you to say?
Well, yes, I am not of the manner born like lots of physicians. I was a competitive weightlifter, competitive bodybuilder. I put myself through college, both undergrad and graduate school, working construction. So I would say that I definitely have a blue collar mentality when it comes to getting the job done, as well as my ability to connect with people in a way that allows them to feel comfortable with someone that they may not ordinarily feel comfortable with, like a physician. So I definitely have a blue collar mentality, without a doubt.
Absolutely. And I mean, bodybuilding. Wow. So you actually understand more than likely what it's like for us federal workers with our physically demanding jobs or what it is to go through and how rigorous our work can be for just us in our agency that we work for. Now, I got to ask you, what exactly is the mission statement, if you will, of FedHurt? Now, I know I spoke on it briefly during the intro here just a bit, but can you clarify for the people out there, what is your mission statement? Let the federal workers out there across this country know, if you don't mind.
Well, my mission statement is from hurt to help. And in essence, what we are trying to accomplish is that immediately upon a federal worker becoming injured, the whole process should be as simple as picking up the phone, contacting our office, and then getting scheduled. Whether it's my offices or not, if I'm not in the geography of where the person is injured, the whole thing regarding OWCP should be from hurt to help, that simple. And truthfully, my mission is to create the largest single provider network to allow access for all injured federal workers. So that's really my mission. My mission is to create a seamless opportunity for any and all injured employees to receive the care that is rightfully theirs.
Right. I love it. That is definitely a mission statement that I can rock with. And you know, just listening to you say that here, I was just sitting here thinking how my podcast is called Fed Up and your company is called Fed Hurt. All right. We both have the word fed in it and our mission statements and who we are as people align with each other, being we both want what's best for all federal employees. Now you're going one way at it and I'm going at it from another way, but it's the same mission in hands. And it kind of reminds me actually of my NALC brother, Richie Ray from Staten Island, New York, whose branch 99 just merged with Brooklyn's branch 41, right? As this is how our relationship is. We both want the same thing. We just go about it different ways is all. And man, I could tell you how he and I have had some heated discussions, but it's all love and respect at the end of the day. And listen, by the way, I just want to say, Richie, if you're out there listening, man, just want to say again, I appreciate you. I know your people out there appreciate you in Region 15. I know how you stepped down from being a president of Branch 99, and that was easy for you to do because you put the members first before your own needs and wants, which is exactly what a union president should do, right? But hey, it worked out for everyone in the end. Richie Ray is now a full-time branch officer with Branch 41 in Brooklyn, second vice president, and he doesn't carry mail anymore. So that's good, Richie. Time to give that body a rest, brother. And by the way, another thing here for Richie Ray, and I believe I talked about this before in another episode, but Richie's also doing a nationwide stort training slash meeting on Zoom with NELC storts from all over the country the last Sunday of every month. So if you're in the NELC and are interested in joining, I strongly urge you to check out the Facebook page, Nationwide Stort Meeting, Storts in All Seasons, and request to be a part of it. And listen, if you're management, right, you will not be accepted. Trust me, because I know Richie Ray does a great job of verifying the people he sends out invites to or accepts to the page. So good luck on trying to infiltrate that page like you do a lot of other pages out here in the social media world. A little off track here, Doc. I apologize, but I had to say all that.
That's okay.
Thank you. But let's get back into it here. Now, it seems that your mission statement, the sole purpose of FedHurt, it comes from the experiences and issues of what federal workers themselves were sharing with you. Is that correct?
That's correct. I mean, that's a driving force behind everything that we do. That informs how we operate every day and why we get up every morning and provide the care to the people that need it the most.
Now, what are some of the stories or issues that you came across in your career that actually pushed you or lead you, I should say, to creating FedHurt and to providing care specifically to federal employees?
Well, that's a good question. So, like lots of things, I just didn't know what I didn't know. And I was unaware of the adversarial relationship between management and the employees. And so when we first started doing this in 2017, we do the claims report and we do the history and the personal statement. And I would hear all of the stories regarding management not helping them fill out their CA-1 or denying that they were hurt from the beginning or delaying filling out their paperwork. And I live in South Florida, and our office is in South Florida, and it's a, you know, very bilingual community over there. And there's lots of people that have English as a second language, and just the abuse and the inability to support them during their most time of need really just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. It just didn't make any sense to me. And I'm still shocked that there's such an adversarial relationship between management and the employees. I've been a business owner for 30 years and I couldn't imagine functioning within that type of atmosphere. So to answer your question, it's been everything from claimants living out of their car to their supervisors not providing them the oversight to get their paperwork completed, or OWCP denying a claim for something as insignificant as a personal statement that was written in Spanish that should have been written in English and it was translated and it didn't match up with what the supervisor said. It's everything and anything in between. It's basically standing up for the people that need a voice. And so that's what informs what we do every single day. That's the driving force while we all come into the office and do what we do.
Right. Is there any kind of story that sticks out the most?
Yeah. Just happened the other day. So listen, I'm going to say this with all certainty. I used to say that we had a 97% success rate with getting the claim approved. I'm going to say with all certainty, since 2017, we've had one denied claim.
Wow.
And I'm going to stand on that. And let me tell you why. Yesterday, we just got a claim approved after our fourth resubmission for an individual who speaks English as a second language. He was casing mail. He didn't have his glasses. A supervisor or a shop steward had suggested utilize his glasses. He put the glasses on. He became dizzy while he was casing mail. He fell and landed on a filing cabinet, punctured a lung, and lacerated his spleen. Mm. Was in the hospital for 2 or 3 days. He ended up in my office, and claim after claim got denied. And finally, I just decided, like, wait a minute, we have to create an opportunity for some new evidence. And what I found out was that at the time, I didn't realize this, but English was a second language and there was something lost in translation. So during our last adjudication, I explained that what was said and what was written needed to be looked at from a position of a person who's not utilizing English as their primary language. That's all that needed to be said. And so when the claims examiner read it and realized that whatever inconsistencies were in the previous narrative, it was as a result of having a language barrier. They read it with a different set of eyes. And lo and behold, we just got that claim approved after four passes. So it's things of that nature. That's the most egregious denial of a claim, especially since the patient, the claimant, was actually working while they fell. Mm-hmm. He put on a pair of glasses, became dizzy while he was casing mail, fell, and the injuries occurred the way I just explained. So yeah, that stands out to me. That's huge. You know, other claimants that get dropped off, we see a lot of TSA agents, and on the way in Miami, it's a giant airport, and they were dropped off with the train or the tram or the shuttle, and on their way to the office, they fell and their claim was denied. If you're on campus and you hurt yourself, then that's an approved OWCP injury. So it's things of that nature that just you hear on a daily basis that just annoy you so much that you're like, how do these people get away with this? There's no reason for it. And I like to fight for the people that need that extra voice. So that's
right.
So those are some examples.
Right. Well, first off, I just want to say thank you for helping him, because I'll tell you what, I know for a fact that a lot of us can relate to this story or how that federal worker felt, because we experienced something similar, especially those of us where a language barrier exists, right? But I commend you on that. And it's obvious that I can see that your driving force is your passion, and your passion is helping us, because let's face it, we're getting screwed continuously when we get injured on a job. I mean, I was going to ask you, why do you care about us so much? You know, why help us specifically? But I think you already answered that by just saying what you just said.
Well, I could give you another reason.
Sure.
So I'm not so sure that everybody knows what agencies are considered federal. Okay. So let's specifically speak about the TSA. The TSA is part of the federal agencies that keep us safe from the time we step onto the airport grounds to the time we fly. And so if there are workers that handle the wanding, or if there are workers that handle the x-ray and they're injured and they're not feeling their best, and we are entrusting them to keep the skies safe, I want to be able to protect that person. I don't want to have someone looking at an x-ray that isn't feeling their best, or that's nervous about whether or not they're going to lose their job because they made a claim because they hurt themselves. So that's a huge driving force. I fly, my family flies, people I care about fly. And the last thing I want is to have someone not working at their optimal if they're protecting us. I also take care of air marshals. We have had lots of patients that are air marshals. These guys are the last defense between the cockpit and what may happen if there's someone intent on doing something bad.
Right.
And so my driving force is taking care of the people that protect our skies and our borders and our parks. These people shouldn't feel jeopardized to go to work if they get hurt. They just want to be just like everybody else, do their job, be protected, come home to their loved ones, and do it all over again the next day.
Right.
And the people that interfere with that are the people that I fight against. The supervisors, OWCP denying claims, mm-hmm. or making life difficult, or not having enough providers, right? Every day I try to find more providers for our network all across the country. That's what I do every single day.
Now, in helping TSA a lot, just like you just said there, do you also see a lot of United States Postal Service employees?
That's a primary bulk of what we do. And again, same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing.
The mistreatment. And it's funny that you said that, because obviously I'm United States Postal Service. My audience knows that I'm retired from the Postal Service. The amount of toxicity and hostility that's involved in the Postal Service, and that just seems to be the cultural norm. But you just clarified something for me, and that's pretty much that it's seen across the border with TSA as well. Is that correct?
I have yet to come across an agency that was supportive when one of their employees became injured. I mean, we take care of Customs and Bureau of Prisons, mm-hmm. and Air Marshals and CIA and FBI and everybody who just wants to go to work and try to avoid getting hurt. And unfortunately, if you do get hurt, you want to be taken care of, just like in the public sector.
Mm-hmm.
But every day at my office, I see the panic in the people's eyes. Am I going to get fired for making a claim for mm-hmm. something that wasn't my fault?
Yep.
Right? Why do these people have to work underneath those conditions? It's hard enough delivering mail in South Florida at 100 degrees, or Dallas, or Houston, or Oklahoma. Like, isn't it hard enough just to do this job that you have to worry about a supervisor not supporting you?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, there's some bad actors out there and people like to milk the system. That's in any profession.
Right.
By and large, Postal Service is one of America's greatest resources, right? Now it's like there's just not a lot of pride on either side. And because how can you be proud of your job if your supervisor is constantly dogging you every day?
It rips us of our work morale.
Exactly. It's terrible.
All this constant toxic and hostility. Yeah, definitely. But I just find it, I'm not surprised that it happens in TSA as well. Just been talking to people that I talk with off air here. But you're right. It seems to be a norm across the board. Now, are some agencies better than some others? Absolutely.
Sure.
But I'm telling you, man, USPS followed by TSA, it's a close second between other agencies, but USPS is up there. And listen, I'm not putting their job above anybody else's in the federal sector. I'm just speaking from experience of how bad it is as compared to other agencies. But that's why I wanted to ask you about that, because I felt they were kind of similar in what we deal with when we're injured on a job. But it's quite obvious that, listen, again, I feel your passion here for the cause. And I'm going to play devil's advocate here a bit, as we all should from time to time, right? But
sure,
there are other places out here that also do what you do specifically, which is help federal workers with their on-the-job work injuries.
Sure.
So tell us, what makes your company different from another one? Like, what do you provide that they don't?
Well, that's a very good question. So I think what separates FedHurt is, first of all, it's 100% physician owned, which means I have a license. I have an ethical code of conduct that we have to follow. I don't have any disruption of services from someone else, in the sense that there's some franchise out there or there's some other groups out there. Our business model is it's from the top down. And so there's consistency in treatment, there's consistency in paperwork, there's consistency in care, there's consistency in messaging. Everything happens from headquarters. So if a claimant calls us from Puerto Rico, everything gets processed the same way. If someone calls us from Richmond, Virginia, everything gets processed the same way. Honestly, we have one denied claim since 2017.
Mm.
So we must be doing something right and consistent. We don't
sure.
ever get claimants calling us up saying, why didn't you get my claim approved? Because truthfully, you may not get it approved on the first pass. I didn't say I have 100% approval. Our doctors don't have 100% approval on the first pass. But one of the things that makes us unique is I don't stop until this claim gets approved.
Right.
It doesn't make a difference. So as you heard on the claimant that previously was approved, that was four adjudications, close, probably over a year period of time.
Right.
So that's what makes our office different. All of our locations, all of our remote locations handled the treatment, and headquarters handles scheduling, MRIs, prescription, claims management, billing, everything of that nature. So never the twain shall meet. There's nothing that is going to interfere with our ability to manage the claim in a way that's going to be consistent with getting a claim approved.
Right. Now, I hear you on all that. I appreciate you sharing that, man. And that does make sense, how FedHurt does separate itself from the rest.
Right.
But I want to talk a little facts here if we can. So
sure.
If I'm injured on a job, walk me through the process and care when I come to you as an injured employee, as I'm coming to FedHurt for help. Walk the audience through the process and what initiating that process looks like for us, the injured federal employee.
It couldn't be any more simple, Ron. It's as simple as calling our 833 number. We then go through a certain series of questions.
And what's that number, by the way?
833-433-3487.
Got it.
So the series of questions would be as simple as this. One, did you report your injury? Yes or no? Two, are you registered with ECOM? If you're not registered with ECOM, we will help register that with you. We'll do it live on the initial phone call. Then once you get registered with ECOM, We then go into a full claims management conversation with one of our claims reps to ascertain what happened as it pertained to the injury, and then get you scheduled in one of our locations that is closest to you. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. There should be no interruption between the injury and the treatment of care. And we will see any injured claimant without an approved claim, meaning we'll get the claim approved. So you just get your treatment. It's as simple as that.
Right.
Call the number. We ask two or three questions, do a claims management conversation, and then get you scheduled with one of our locations, with one of our medical providers, and then subsequently you'll see the physical therapist at that location.
Got it. And I want to say something to that, but at first I want to just backtrack a little bit if I can here. You mentioned that, and I'm glad you said this, by the way, you said that, yeah, your doctors don't get everything right on the first go. That's not necessarily a hit against them, because the system, right, you'll get the denial from them more than likely, right? So when it comes back from the Department of Labor OWCP with that denial, it obviously tells you what you need,
yes,
right, when you get that letter. So that's easy to fix.
It's easy to fix.
And I've seen it at times where it came back as a denial and the same fucking thing was released back and it got accepted. Now, how that worked, I don't know. I'm just saying sometimes they don't read the entirety,
correct,
of what's submitted to them.
Correct.
So I just wanted to point that out, because there's certain people out there who say they bat 100%. Listen, there's no such thing as 100%. You know what? Who's undefeated? Father Time. That's
exactly
it. Nobody else.
Yeah, I'll be the first to admit that we may not get it on the first pass, but they give you the explanation. There's five elements, and typically it's fact of injury or causation. And if you just present new evidence, or maybe it just needs to be explained in a fashion that the reader can understand it. Maybe it was a, you know, very complicated injury or a complicated timeline or whatever the case may be.
Right.
That's fine. They're entitled to review a claim and deny it.
Right. No, I agree. And you mentioned some of the basic elements there, and I just want to clarify for the guys out there. Listen, it has to be timely filed. That's number one. Two, you have to be a civil employee. Obviously, you are. Three, the fact of injury. Four, the performance of duty. And five, which is the number one reason of denied claims to begin with, and that's causal relationship. So those are the five basic elements. I'm glad you mentioned that. But again,
yeah, that's right.
No problem. It's the statistic within the statistic that I look at. Because again, no one, I don't care who you are, no one can get 100% off the bat. It just won't happen. It's the nature of the beast. However, the fact that when it comes back denied and you can go right back, boom, and you do get accepted, to me, that's the real statistic that matters. The statistic within the statistic. So I need people to understand that. One, nobody is perfect. No one can say they're 100% accurate. And two, if you get a denied claim, it's not the end of the world. It's not that the doctor screwed up. It's not that your provider screwed up.
It's just the system. It happens all the time.
It's the system. Right.
Let me interject with one thing.
Sure.
Even if you're one of our claimants and you get a denied claim, we won't interrupt your care. So even if you're in our network and you get a developmental or a denial letter, we don't stop treatment because we know in the second pass, we'll get it sorted out.
Right.
So there's never a chance where a person should panic. It's when you go to the wrong provider who doesn't know what to do next and thinks that they're going to get stuck with an unpaid bill, that's when it becomes bad for the claimant. They don't want to allow the patient to treat anymore.
Right.
Or they start sending threatening letters. That's never our policy. As I stated, we get every claim approved. I just got one approved the other day after a year. Point of the matter is, we didn't stop seeing this patient. This patient was more than welcome to continue with care. It's part of my obligation. That's what makes us different, is that I'm committed to this and there's nothing that's going to stop me from getting a claim approved. I don't care how many times I have to do an adjudication. They're not going to win.
Right.
They'll never win.
You'll never quit. And that's exactly what I preach to everybody out there. Number one, you're not alone. But also number two, don't ever quit. Keep fighting for yourself, for your rights, advocate for yourselves. You know, you got to do research on your own sometimes and do your due diligence as an injured employee here, right? You guys out there, you know, listening, you already know what it is and how I stand on that. You can't expect someone to do it all for you and hold your hand. However, we do the most part of it for you, meaning a union person, or in this case, a doctor. someone like Corey Walton out there from the Ada Arbitration Podcast, right? We all know that guy. He's awesome. Or Fed Up, for that matter. I'm here for you always. But you still have a degree of work that you have to do yourself. Keep educating yourselves. Keep fighting. And I like that you don't ever quit or give up. So, but you also mentioned something I want to bring up here. Oh, actually, I want to ask you about. And that's the 833 number. So do you have, is it a centralized location when someone calls in or emails? Meaning, I guess what I'm asking here is, no matter what office you go to, wherever they are across this country, they're going to call in, do the initial intake process in one centralized location, which is in Florida.
Correct.
Okay. To me, that's big. And that's why I wanted to ask you, because too many places where this is done, and I see this because you guys out there, my audience is calling me, texting me, messaging me, whatever the case is, emailing me. You'll go to different places, and it seems that each place is ran different, right? And what I mean by that is it's better to have a centralized location where you get stuff done. This is just how I feel personally, my opinion, rather than go to a different place where you can get different, treated differently. I shouldn't say different treatment, but treated differently or handled differently from location to location. This is, again, this is what I see from other people who do what you do, but also I'm hearing it from you, the federal workers who let me know, hey, I went to so-and-so place. This is what happened. You guys are telling me your negative experiences. That's why I wanted to ask you. It's one centralized location.
Correct. So in an OWCP claim, there's two aspects. There's the treatment side, and then there's the, obviously, the claims management side. So my headquarters in Fort Lauderdale handles claims for thousands of patients a month. Okay, we're probably the number one claims processor for claims coming in through OWCP. Each one of our remote locations handles treatment and therapy the way they handle treatment and therapy. So at the end of the day, the consistency of the paperwork happens at HQ, and the consistency of the patient care is handled at the remote location. And it's a great relationship because at the end of the day, they're separate. And that's the way the medicine portion should be and the claims management portion should be. All of the remote locations, all the providers, all the medical doctors, they get paid directly by FedHerb. So they're not concerned with whether or not the claim gets approved. And that's how it should be.
Right.
We handle all of that. They handle the treatment. And that's the relationship that I have with all of our providers. They're not concerned with adjudicating a claim or a developmental or a denial letter or any questions that the claimant may have with, you know, why does my supervisor do this or why? They handle treatment. And it's been a great relationship because the patient shouldn't have to be in the middle of someone worrying about whether or not their claim gets approved.
Right.
Meaning the provider. Lots of the providers across the country don't know how to handle OWCP claims.
Correct.
And that's what I'm trying to do, is to create a consistent provider network so the doctor gets to be the doctor, the patient receives the care, and that's the end of that.
Right. I love how that's separated, because you're right. And that brings me into another question here, and that is, does FedHerb work with orthopedics or general surgeons, whatever it is, in an area where a particular practice is located? Meaning, can you refer out to them as needed, yet still help take care of all the paperwork and billing associated with that outside orthopedic and surgeon? And I ask this because it's another issue we all face as federal employees, as it seems that most, not all, but most surgeons or orthopedics out here, all they want to do is their job, and they don't want to mess around with any of that paperwork, let alone learn the language needed for medical narratives to help get that surgery approved, or don't even know how to bill properly for it, right? Then that patient's stuck with the bill, as you mentioned earlier.
Correct.
But what's worse is they won't write the narrative needed sometimes for that surgery. And some of those orthopedics and surgeons, you know, they'll refer you out to someone that they work with to handle the medical narrative, which is usually a medical legal department, to do those narrative reports for us. But then they charge us, the federal employee, anywhere from $300 to $2,500.
Wow.
And that's the highest I've heard, $2,500. I negotiated one of mine down to $300. But again, advocating for yourself, this is why I preach this. But they do this all while we are out of work already.
Correct.
And haven't been getting paid anything causing another hardship for us. So explain that process, if you will.
So let me answer your, let me comment on that. So here's what we're trying to do. The first pass in creating the FedHurt network is going to be to establish relationships with general practitioners and physical therapists. We are now in the process of inviting specialists in all of the states that we're currently in. So to answer your question, it's hard to say this without throwing anybody under the bus, but suffice it to say, the higher you go up the food chain, the more controlling a medical practitioner is.
Sure.
So by the time you get, and I can say this with experience because I've dealt with all kinds of medical practitioners, since 1998. So by the time you get up to the orthopedic level, they want to control not only the treatment, but they also want to control how you do the billing and the narratives and things of that nature. So I don't know how easy or difficult it will be to add these types of providers. It just depends on how I present, how we will take care of the billing side for them. So to answer your question, we are actively pursuing specialists, more specifically orthopedists, to include those types of providers in our nationwide network. It takes time, but that is part of our objective as well. So that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to eliminate the barrier of a orthopedist saying, well, I won't see this patient without an approved claim. Well, if we negotiate your hourly, you'll see the patient and I'll worry about getting the claim approved. So that's what we're trying to establish. Like I said, the mission is to create the largest physician-owned provider network from hurt to help for all injured federal patients.
Gotcha. And that does make sense. And listen, for everybody out there, if you're in the beginning of your work injury and you're going in for your surgery, whatever, in the next month, whatever it is, and you still have that insurance, and that orthopedic, the general surgeon, whoever's doing your said surgery for whatever it is on your body, and they can't get it approved, and you need it right away, and this is an option, not everybody can get this option. However, if you do have health insurance, call your health insurance, your insurance provider, and tell your doctor, and have them do a peer-to-peer review, it's called, with each other. Now, what that does is that gets to claim it approved for the surgery with their health insurance, even though it was a work injury. That's why they had to do a quote unquote peer-to-peer review. So they'll accept it. You get your surgery so you can get better and get back to work as soon as possible, medically possible. In the meantime, while your surgeon, orthopedic surgeon, whoever, while they're working on getting that approved from the Department of Labor, once it's approved, then what happens is on the back end, and this doesn't include the claimant at all, once they do the peer-to-peer review and it's approved, they get their surgery. Once it's approved through Department of Labor and they say, okay, we approved the surgery, what happens is the insurance provider will contact and handle all that stuff behind the scenes and get their money back from the Department of Labor. And that's all handled on the back end of things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So there's options out there for you guys in case you don't realize it. So again, not everybody's going to be entitled to this option, but it's there if you need to get the surgery right away and it can't wait. And number two, it's a way to get you back to work ASAP as medically possible, right? So just realize that peer-to-peer review, if you have insurance, utilize it if you want or you need to get the surgery right away. And it's not getting approved because we all know Department of Labor and OWCP takes their good old time on making a decision. And it shouldn't be like that. But listen, Doc, great stuff here. I appreciate it. Listen, I'm beginning to see not only why you fight so hard to get claims accepted and more importantly, want to help us federal employees, but also how easy FedHurt can make the process, at least with regards to all the paperwork and treatment goes. Because again, the process itself can be a long, drawn out process for any federal worker, as it's the process that hurts more than the injury itself for the most part. But it seems like FedHurt can decrease the amount of frustration and stress that one may deal with if they didn't go to a place such as FedHurt, right? So I get it. And listen, I'm nearly sold here, right? But I'm nearly sold here, Doc, but I got to ask you, and this is huge for me and Fed Up for that matter, as it's something I preach to all federal workers and union organizations out there. And that is simply this. I say all the time, knowledge is power. So let me ask you, what knowledge can you share with the listeners out here and all federal employees. Because in addition to everything we just talked about here, obviously training and knowledge is crucial to what you do and to your mission statement. And without it, you or anyone else for that matter would be useless with regards to what we do. But when a federal employee goes through the process with FedHerd, can we count on them to also educate us, the federal employee, on the process to help us better understand it? Because I feel like transparency and communication is the key to any good relationship, just as my listeners hear me say that regarding any union leadership or organization for that matter, as well as any manager within an agency, right?
Correct.
But communication and transparency are huge. So I guess what I'm asking here is, will your case manager, that claims manager, right, will they explain the process to the federal employee, even if it has to be dumbed down for some in a manner for that employee can better understand it at their level of understanding? As OWCP and the process can be very complicated to some, but by doing that, it can eliminate a lot of stress and anxiety or frustration, whatever it is, for people who are going through the process. So talk to me. Is that something a case manager will do?
Okay, so that's a very, very good question. One that is not as easily answerable as I'd like it to be. And let me explain to you why.
Okay.
By the time an injured employee gets to us, if it's a first-time caller, they've already been put through the ringer. There's already some preconceived biases regarding the ability for someone that they don't know as to whether or not they can help. They've already been brainwashed by their supervisor and or the sewing circle of workers that they associate with as to what's going to happen next. So the first thing we have to do during any new patient exchange is to just calm everybody down. Explain to them that the law is on their side, that this is all that we do, and then we are going to be with them from the beginning of their initiation to their release back to work, okay? If the claimant can participate in a calm fashion and allow us to do what it is that we do so well and be a part of the solution, then the process from initial phone call to initial treatment works seamlessly. However, that doesn't always happen. They're nervous and scared and apprehensive, and maybe this is their second time dealing with an injury. And a fellow employee said, look, give these guys a call. They know what they're doing. So it all depends on how we are approached from the initial get-go. But by and large, most claimants are interested in having this go the easy button route. And in doing so, we explain to them the process of registering for eComp, of allowing us to entify or become their entity manager, of how easy it is to get their claims started. So yes, to answer your question, part of what we do is educate each new claimant as to the process of what happens when you get hurt. We have videos and we have emails that we send, and all of our claims managers are patient and understanding, right? But there are occasions where they, you know, they're not so easily understanding the claimant because they're angry.
Right.
It took them 3 months to find someone. So we have to fight that bias a little bit, and we try to do it with patience. If everyone would participate calmly and nicely and realize that we're on their side, we're the good guy, nothing bad is going to happen. We do the best we can with each person. And by and large, it's the 80-20 rule. 80% go very smoothly. And we feel better for having had that conversation. But there are your smaller percentage of people that, you know, to quote Cool Hand Luke, some people you just can't reach.
Right.
And they're just, no matter how much you want to explain, this is how easy it is and this is what we do, they're just not satisfied with that. But to answer your question, from the initial phone call to the initial appointment, my team is trained to do everything they can to make a calm exchange with the claimant so it doesn't further irritate their already difficult situation. That's our promise. That's what we do.
Gotcha. And listen, that's great to hear. I love that you said patience, because that also is an important factor when we're communicating stuff of this nature, regarding OWCP and the process to us federal employees. So to hear you say that word patience just makes me smile here. But listen, it's too many times I speak with somebody, and you said it yourself just now, but the majority tell me the same thing you just said. They express to me how lost or frustrated or pissed off they are due to the process, because either they don't understand it, they've been through the ringer already, and it's often the case with management as well, right? The knowledge just isn't there. Even when I sit there and explain it to them, and I consider myself to be a pretty knowledgeable guy here and a good teacher, right? But I thought it was a good question to ask you, as I felt that was extremely important for us federal employees. So I'm glad that you guys actually do that. And I get what you're saying. Sometimes some of us are so far through it, and we're like, everyone's against us, and we just have this pissed off mentality when we're trying to go somewhere else for help. And you're right. Sometimes people need to take a deep breath, relax. And again, your patience and explaining that process will go a long way, because I can speak from experience of being someone who was pissed off going through what I went through. But I also had to realize, hey, there may be people out there who may be able to help me. Now, I helped myself for the most part and did my research, which is why I'm huge in advocating for yourself and researching shit yourself, and not stop going off the good faith of what management's supposed to do for you or your union representation. But again, I appreciate you guys. I know that will definitely help decrease some of these emotions I just spoke of that we deal with because of the unknown, simply by educating us and communicating to us, using that patience, being open and transparent with us regarding the OWCP process. Because again, it's the process, not the injury, which proves to be the most painful or burdening thing to us. Now, speaking of knowledge and training, you also offer training to federal employees and to their respected local union branches as well.
Correct.
In fact, you just came back from a 40-day cross-country trip not too long ago, where you were meeting with local union presidents, training their members and union stewards from all over the country, from different federal unions and different federal agencies. So tell us about that. How did that go for you?
Well, we decided that we wanted to expand our network the old-fashioned way, shaking hands and kissing babies like they did back in the old days. And so my brother and I, who works with me, who handles most of the technology side and some of the business growth side, we rented an RV and basically drove an RV from Maine all the way to Salt Lake City, Utah, and crisscrossed the country and met people who worked for all aspects of the federal government. And you know, so it was a great experience. We got to see a large portion of the country, but the main issue was basically the same. The people of the federal government are underserved when it comes to what happens when they get hurt. And the people that are quote unquote running the show are still in need of coaching as it pertains to how to help their members. So we were trying to satisfy multiple aspects on this trip. Helping train the stewards and helping train the presidents, as well as meeting people who need our help.
Gotcha, gotcha. And when you say train, can you specify?
Yeah, we have a brief OWCP training program that explains how to register claims with eComp, the explanation of what a CA-1 is. I mean, it really starts with the basics. If you don't know what the language is as it pertains to an injury and what are the steps involved in getting a claim opened up, it doesn't matter that you're the president, right? Your stewards are looking for you to train them. And, you know, time is also a factor, and not everybody is technologically savvy. So we've broken this down into a very simple PowerPoint presentation. And then truthfully, the most important part about what it is that I do and what we do is to help empower the members to know that they're not alone, mm-hmm. and that the law is on their side.
Amen.
They cannot be intimidated. They cannot be denied. You know, and I think I want to give you credit for this. Knowing the federal code of regulations, I'm not trying to go back to school to be a lawyer, but knowing that that's available and knowing that the stewards and the presidents have that at their fingertips to help with the grievance if someone is interfering with a member's ability to receive care, that's against the law. And so, you know, that's part of what it is that we do during our trainings. I think it's important to be fed up and to know that you're just going to work to do your job. That's it. And having someone deny the ability to receive care is should just get everybody upset.
Yeah.
The general population, the people of the United States should know that this is happening to the people that take care of all of us.
Correct. All too often. And you said it yourself best with it's the law. Yet the law is being broken and violated here by management and the agency itself. Yet there's no repercussions. If you don't, if you guys don't get fucking pissed off about this, listen, this is your livelihood. You know, what if you can't fight for yourself like some others did? What if you can't? Listen, I understand. Again, I preach this all the time. I'm no one special, guys. Did I fight for myself? You're damn right I did. But I knew I had a family. I was providing for someone. This is my livelihood. I had to fight tooth and nail to get where I'm at today with all this big mess when I got injured on a job. You guys should be pissed off as well, right? You guys should be educating yourselves. But you're right. It is the law. But I appreciate you saying that. And again, I hear the passion there, brother.
Well, I want to say something a little more controversial.
Sure. Shoot.
I mean, it appears that I'm on the right platform for that. And this is kind of how I feel. There are some locals in all, across all unions that are quote unquote friends of FedHurt. And I love them and I applaud their ability to allow me to do the Jerry Maguire principle. Help me help you.
Right.
It just, it makes such sense. And what I mean by that is that you can't do this alone. You can't do a medical narrative without a medical provider. It's just not possible.
Right.
So when I call the union locals to try to engage in some kind of meaningful exchange with how I can help, again, I am well aware of how the unions work. There's no solicitation. There's no financial remuneration. There's no quid pro quo. This is what I do, and this is what you do. And part of what you do should be helping all of your members find medical providers, whether it's me or anybody else. Your job is to support each member's ability to be a whole member underneath your local. Financially, physically, mentally, spiritually. So when a medical provider calls, do your job and vet him. So what does that mean to vet him? Is he or she registered with OWCP? Do they have any board complaints? Can they provide you their malpractice insurance? How long have they been in practice for? What reviews do they have online? Do they have any board complaints? Do your job so your members don't have to Google who to go to see. We're not taking any business out of the RWCA's desk either. There isn't an RWCA that isn't 6 months behind with trying to do what it is that they have to do. I know that for a fact because they call me, okay? So here, I didn't want to get heated, but now I'm getting heated because I don't know how many people, locals I've called with no return phone call. First of all, have a little respect. Have a little respect and return someone's phone call and either tell them to pound sand or to let's get to work together for the members that voted you in. You now sit behind a desk.
Yep.
You don't have to carry a mailbag. Okay? You've made it to the promised land, brother. Do your job.
Mm-hmm.
Do your job. Take my phone call. Because your members call me. Your members call me. They ask me, when can I come see you? And I said, why didn't your president tell you about me? They don't know about you. Well, they know about me. They know, and they're going to know more because I'm in the process of flying to Washington, D.C. to have a congressional hearing regarding what the unions are supposed to do as it pertains to protecting their members. If you're taking dues and you're not taking phone calls, get out.
That's it.
And this is not to the people that take my phone calls. You know what's up.
Right.
You know what's up. You're doing the right thing. I get locals that call me every day to make sure that I'm still doing what I'm doing because the last thing that they want to worry about is one of their members not getting care or going to a provider that doesn't know how to do OWCP. That's all we do. All right, that's enough for the preaching. And I feel bad that I went off a little bit, but you got me riled up, Ron.
Hey, this is what we're here for, brother. I could tell that you're passionate about doing what you do because you see the frustration that we deal with. You see the toxic and hostility we deal with from management or agencies. And you obviously see the, I'm not going to be careful with my wording here. Fuck it. You also see the idiots within our national unions who just don't do nothing. And this can't be seen any more than what the NRLCA is going through. They are in shambles. And I'm not going to turn this into a union show. And I want to get off the track here, but I hope they listen to this because their OWCP guy, all right, Devin Cassidy, listen, I have not heard a positive thing about you. I'm sorry, I haven't. There's a lot of rural carriers I talk to who say they reach out to you. They fill out the Form 30 that you need, and yet they still don't get anywhere with you. What are you doing? You made close to, if not over, six figures. So what's up? What are you doing for your members? But I'll say that for another time. But
yeah, let's say that for a whole special podcast for the people that are taking dues but not taking calls.
Exactly. I agree 100%. But back to your what we were talking about with your training, who was the majority of the federal workforce that you came across and met with and trained when you were out in that 40-day RV trip?
By and large, it's the USPS.
It is.
By and large, it's the USPS. They are the number one portion of the federal government workforce that has the most exposure to injuries. Statistically speaking, they're the number one.
Right.
And so, again, the fact that a local wouldn't take a phone call from a physician that's willing to help. Listen, don't blame me for getting paid. I'm not going to bill the member. I'm billing OWCP.
Right.
It's not coming out of your pocket.
Exactly.
Again, we talked about this as far as integrity is concerned. Do you know that I do a quarterly billing audit by a third-party source to determine whether or not we're in compliance with federal standards for billing? I don't have to do that, but I do that. The last thing I want to do is be out of compliance with what it is that I'm explaining to the locals. They are entrusting me to take care of their members and make sure that I'm billing correctly and that the narratives are done correctly. You know, they have an obligation and I have an obligation, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
I call these locals all over the country. They don't know me from a hole in the wall. Well, they do, because the next thing they do is they call the president that I recommend that they call. And the president says, yeah, he does exactly what he says he does. Members are happy. That's what keeps you in office.
Yes.
Happy members.
Yes, sir.
Let's take a little page out of Business 101. I've been in business for 30 years. You can't be in business for 30 years if you don't make someone happy.
Right.
I just don't get it.
No, listen, I got you. And to your point, that makes sense here, as it is mainly United States Postal Service employees coming forward publicly or not publicly, but they're the majority coming forward, whether they are speaking on my platform, Fed Up, or another media platform. Postal employees are leading the charge when it comes to the mistreatment,
yes, sir,
from their agency, their management, even their own union representation, or lack thereof, I should say. Now tell me, how were you greeted from these employees from, because I'm assuming, first off, what unions did you see the most of, would you say, within the Postal Service?
The NALC and then APWU.
Okay.
I was given some backstage tours of facilities. And like I said, you know, I didn't know what I didn't know. And I don't want to segue out of this, but most people in the country think you put a stamp on an envelope and that's the end of the story. I certainly thought that was the case until I started treating federal employees, most specifically USPS. There's a lot involved in what happens between putting a stamp on there and getting into your mailbox. And so, you know, they're happy to see us because there's some nuances of this job that go beyond the normal biomechanics of the human physiology. I didn't know if I mentioned this before, but part of my undergraduate work was in exercise physiology at the University of Florida. So I am well acquainted with how the body moves in space and time. And some of the jobs and some of the requirements, mostly, more importantly, casing mail, that's enough to put any human being down, let alone someone who does it every day, day in, day out. And so to answer your question, the workers were happy. They wanted to sit and talk. And how can we do our jobs better, different? How can we help avoid injuries? Which, you know, truthfully, I don't know why the post office doesn't have an injury prevention department. If they don't want their employees to get treated, they should help help them avoid getting injured, which seems pretty self-explanatory to me, but that's neither here nor there.
Right. No, it's good that they greeted you well as far as the employees, but how did the union leaders greet you? Because listen, I'm asking you about the union leaders because those are the ones who are mostly against outside help from anyone regarding their on-the-job work injuries.
The ones that get it, get it. You know, the ones that get it, get it. I don't want to name names, and I would love to, because I don't want, you know, listen, you know, this is, they're not, there's no such thing as an official endorsement of an outside
right.
vendor. But the ones that get it, I'm on their speed dial. They call me.
Right.
They ask me. They know that they can count on me. So the ones that get it, get it.
Right.
Those are the people that I want to work with and for. I tell them I serve you and your members, but I work for these people.
Right.
Okay. So I'm pretty humble in what it is that I say that I do. I work for the United States government, when you really think about it. I work for the members.
Right.
I work for the people.
Listen, the members know. You don't have to name names. And that's what the members know, their MBA, their president, local president, I'm speaking, or even their national union. They know who is screwing them. They know. So you don't even have to name names. And plus, the people who are doing the wrongdoings and not giving the representation, they also know. So you don't got to name names here. But listen, it's interesting, not surprising, but interesting from the sense that our national union, and from my case, it would be the NALC, more specifically, some of the MBAs, national business agents, are really against outside help. I feel like it's as if they're brainwashed. But it's really interesting how some regions in the NALC use outside help for the on-the-job work injuries. But then again, the majority do not use outside help. So I don't get it, but even APWU for that matter, right? Some do, some don't. Yet we have some of these MBAs who act like they're God and don't need any help. Meanwhile, employees are suffering because they aren't getting the help they deserve. Now, listen, Doc, I know this doesn't concern you and this is outside of your control. I get that. But listen, someone like yourself, a doctor, a CEO of multiple successful practices that do nothing but help and treat federal employees and get their claims accepted, are here for us. And many of us have been and still are currently going to one of your practices for treatment, from what it sounds like, and for help regarding their on-the-job work injuries. So doesn't it make sense to have a conversation with someone of your stature? If I am a union leader, can you answer that for me?
Ron, it's about as rhetorical of a question, and I know you're being half facetious, but yes, it's as if they're on a desert island and I have water and they don't want to have a conversation with me and I just want to give them the water. They need the water.
Right.
They're on the island, right? The locals or the MBAs or whatever, they're on the island with their members and I have the water and I'm going to bill a third party for the water. I'm not even going to charge them for the water. I'm not charging the NALC. I'm charging OWCP for the water.
Right.
And yet they still don't want to have a conversation.
Right. I get it.
Listen, it's as simple as this. And this is the only thing that I've heard that makes sense. They don't want to be held responsible.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of things they could do. First, vet any provider. Vet them.
Preach.
Do whatever you need to vet them. The second thing is create a hold harmless agreement. Meaning, if they recommend a provider to one of their members, they do what is called a hold harmless agreement, which says, we're not responsible for this. Not to mention, whoever does something incorrectly in a medical setting, there's malpractice insurance for that. And typically, the only thing that would happen is the claim wouldn't get approved. And then part of my relationship with all these unions is, I keep on adjudicating the claim. Care doesn't get interrupted. There's no care that ever gets interrupted. So I don't know why there is such a resistance to having someone bring them the water.
Yeah.
I'm bringing the water. Just put out your cup. And you don't even have to pay for the water. You're getting Evian at tap water price.
And that's a good way to look at it and explain it. And you're right. It most certainly does make sense, especially since a company like FedHurt would be the ones taking care of all the medical treatment documentation, including those narrative reports we just discussed earlier, which all you do in that aspect is get claims accepted with no cost to any federal employees whatsoever. That in its own right would allow the union leaders in return and the officials to concentrate solely on what they do best
exactly.
and should be, which is representing their members with regards to any contractual things, including grievances.
Correct. Absolutely.
100% sense to me. But again, who am I? I'm the one special.
We're going to Congress. It doesn't make a difference. We're going to get this mandated that they have to provide at least an option for medical providers. That's what's going to happen this year. We're going to Congress.
That's good to hear, man. Please keep us updated on that. I mean, listen, doctors treat employees, and in your case, even know how to write medical narratives that are needed with the language needed as well, mind you, to help get claims, surgeries, whatever it is, approved by the Department of Labor and OWCP. Now, there are some people within our national unions that can help with writing narratives and know the language to get it done. Sure, there are a few, but that's just it. There are only a few to help with the vast majority of us who get hurt on the job that need help. That's an issue right there in itself, and you discussed it earlier on here a little bit, and it causes more of a hardship for an injured employee because we have to wait even more than what we already have to because union leaders, MBAs, OWCP reps, whatever the case is, these people are busy, and I put the word busy in air quotes here, right? For my audience, you can read between the lines here. You already know what it is, but they are busy and they can't get to everyone at once. But that is why I also say you got to educate yourselves. You got to do your own research and do your part as well, being an injured employee. So you don't always have to rely on help from someone that often at times never really comes for us anyway. But remember, you have the right to choose any provider to treat you for your injuries. So why not rely on a provider like FedHurt, who is a registered and accepted OWCP provider, to not only treat us injured employees, but to also take care of any and all medical narrative reports for us. And again, zero cost to federal employees, in addition to assisting us with any and all documentation or forms needed for our employer or the Department of Labor and OWCP, right? I mean, with FedHurt, you get a claims manager, a case manager, if you will, to assist you and oversee the whole process from beginning to end, which is huge for us. And that brings me to my next question here, and possibly a few more depending on your answer here. But my question to you, Doc, is how can someone vet an OWC provider such as yourself? But you already covered that earlier, I believe, right?
Yeah. I mean, there isn't an official way to vet, but truthfully, it's really just like some basic common knowledge. Are they in good standing with OWCP? Now, OWCP does have a list of providers that are no longer allowed to participate in OWCP. So those, you should look at those as well.
Correct.
So are they in good standing with OWCP? Or do they have malpractice insurance? Are they in good standing with the state that they participate in? Like, there's some general easy things that are all online. You know, you could always check each medical board for any complaints for any provider. It's just simple. If a local just did that, I don't think national would have a problem with signing off on them providing a recommendation. The other way to do this is this. When I was practicing and someone needed a recommendation for an attorney, the state of Florida required that you gave them three examples and let the patient figure it out for themselves. So one of the unions, one of the locals that I deal with, in their newsletter, they have three providers and they don't endorse any of them. And they say, listen, these are the three providers that we offer in our newsletter. We take no responsibility for what happens if you use any of them. We just know that they're in good standing with OWCP or something of that nature.
CYA factor.
At a minimum, just do that. Mm-hmm. Just do that at a minimum. I had a union that told me the other day that we don't recommend anybody. We just tell our members to Google. Like, really? And you're still going to take the membership money? You're still going to take that and not provide them? Your job is to oversee and provide Google. They could have done that without you and the membership.
That's what I did.
Well, I mean, again, that's a shame. That's a shame. I'm sorry that you had an experience. But if you didn't have that experience, we may not be having this conversation.
Exactly. I wouldn't be as educated as I am today. There's no doubt about it. And again, that's well said. I couldn't have said that better myself, what you just said there. And that's only one side of the coin, if you will. At least for me, it is. I wouldn't be doing good here by my brothers and sisters out there if I didn't ask about the other side of that coin here, right? Which is compliance. And I know you touched on this a little bit earlier, but talk to me again here in case someone didn't understand it. Talk more on it. How do you make sure you and all your staff and employees stay compliant? Do you have an in-depth training or manual that revolves strictly around compliance? Because I got to be blunt here. I mean, compliance is big for any national union leader or representative or officer. I mean, it's big for me as well, and it should be as well for the employees. Obviously, there's been issues in the past with certain individuals or companies when they displayed unethical or illegal behavior that's left a bad taste in the mouths of these people in our national unions who hold their positions within that respected union. But it's a big reason why many unions don't utilize outside help anymore. So I get it. Again, there's some ignorance to it as well. But, it's too bad that it's a few actions of those few bad apples that have ruined it for everyone, as it should, right? Because at the end of the day, we as federal employees want to trust and put our good faith in someone to do the right thing by us, just as our federal unions want what's best for us as well, though I feel sometimes they don't care about us and it shows in how they treat our own members, but they still say they do not want to get caught up in any of that unethical or illegal practices, nor do they want us to get caught up in it either, right? Integrity, again, something that I also preach here on Fed Up. So tell me, what compliance measures, again, do you take to deter any of that unethical or illegal behavior from happening? And do you hold trainings of compliance with your staff at all your locations? And if so, what does that look like?
Okay, well, that's a good question. So the fact that we have a network without walls, if you will, one of the main issues that we have regarding compliance is the billing portion of the program. So typically in the federal comp space, there's two things that happen that create a person or a provider to go awry. And that's billing for services that weren't performed or billing for services above and beyond what was performed while the patient was there. Okay, so let's explain how we address both. Our practice has to have an initialed and signed charge slip by every single patient for every single visit. Otherwise, we won't bill the services. So for example, Ron, if you were to go to our Richmond, Virginia office and you received therapeutic exercises, therapeutic activities, manual therapy, okay? Each one of those codes would be initialed by you, and then the charge slip would be signed at the end of the therapy. That charge slip then gets uploaded into our HIPAA-compliant Dropbox, and then after we download it and make sure it's signed and initialed, we then bill it. So the first compliance issue we have is billing. Nothing is billed unless there's a signature and initials ever. We just send it back. We'll send the charge slip back. That's the first thing.
So that basically also comes down to you're only billing for what the patient actually needs or is getting treated for, correct?
Correct. And as you may have heard me earlier, I already have a negotiated rate with the provider. So whether they bill for one code or 50 codes, it doesn't change what I pay them. So there's no incentive. We don't do percentage billing, which I can't attest to any of the other providers. But at the end of the day, for lack of a better word, making this up, I pay them $1 an hour to see my patients. So there's no financial incentive for them to do more codes.
Mm.
Okay, so that's the first law of compliance with our office. The second law of compliance, as I mentioned earlier, is we do a third-party quarterly billing audit and note audit to make sure that we are in compliance with all federal statutes. Typically, those are the two things that get anyone in trouble: billing for services that weren't performed or billing for more services that weren't performed on the day that the patient was there. So those two things do not exist. As far as other compliance is concerned, all of our exchange of information is done through a HIPAA-compliant Dropbox. All of our paperwork has been modified in order to be in compliance with federal statutes. We have trainings on how to answer the phone. We have trainings on how to engage with the nurse practitioners that call and ask for information. Unless that nurse practitioner sends over a signed medical release from the patient, we do not give any information. That's a HIPAA violation. I know lots of offices that the nurse practitioner calls up and says, can I get these records sent over without a signed records release from the patient? That's a HIPAA compliance law.
Mm-hmm.
That's broken right there. So to answer your question, we do everything we can within a compliant manner in order to provide the patient and the locals that we work with peace of mind as it pertains to having a person do third-party billing. And it's not that hard to be compliant. It really isn't.
Right. No, I got you. Quick question here. Do nurse practitioners sign off on any medical narratives?
No.
Thank you. That was a trick question. I just had to ask that. You obviously knew the answer.
Yes.
Again, it was a trick question, which you answered, you know, correctly. But if a nurse practitioner signs a medical narrative, that's an automatic denial from OWCP. So just for people out there, for their well-knowing, it'll come back. You'll get a denial 100% of the time.
Correct.
If a nurse practitioner signs it. Right. A PA.
Right.
Right. So it has to be an MD's signature on that.
MD or DO. Yes.
MD or DO. Listen, thank you for sharing that with us about compliance. I appreciate it. And I'm sure there's people out there listening who appreciate you explaining that as well. And I guess it would be safe to say then that FedHRT ensures that compliance is not only first and foremost, but also confirms that it is being followed 100%, not only to the letter of the law, but also from your staff from all your locations because of your training given, right? So we can expect the same treatment across the board no matter where we go. Is that an accurate statement to say here?
Yes, that's very accurate.
Good, good.
I mean, my job is to be able to provide the care in an ethical manner and sleep at night and have a profitable business. And there's nothing, having a profitable business is not a bad word. That enables a business that's profitable enables them to keep on doing business. And as I've said, I've been in business since 1998 because it's been profitable, because we do the right thing, because we provide the treatment and the care.
Right.
And we have periodic oversight with experts that want to make sure that what we're doing is done correctly. The last thing you want to do is do something afoul that runs afoul of the law that we didn't know we were doing by accident. So I have experts weigh in all the time, lawyers and OWCP experts and billing and compliance experts. You know, I can't know everything. And it's important for us to have that type of compliance to make sure that we're able to continuously provide care for the people that provide so much for us.
Gotcha. One more quick question here regarding compliance and we'll move on here. But is everything handled at that centralized location?
When you say everything, be a little bit more specific. What do you mean?
Billing. Is your billing done by each location themselves?
No. No, everything happens at headquarters. It's so much better that way. Mm-hmm. There's one billing software. Oversight happens at the location. Any issues we're able to catch on the fly.
Yes.
It's just great. I mean, it's the best thing. It's really...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's the best thing. I mean, it's what makes our office, in my opinion, a superior way to provide care.
Right. And it's just as you said earlier, the offices can concentrate on what matters most, and that's the treatment to the injured employee, and the billing and everything else gets handled at the centralized location. I love that. I think it's more efficient like that. And clearly you just, you know, confirm that, right?
Correct. It's more efficient.
Yeah.
And they're not worried about whether or not they're getting paid from OWCP because they get paid by FedHRT at the end of the month.
Right.
That's what happens. You know, we do that. And so there's no issues with looking at a patient cross-eyed like, hey, OWCP didn't pay or I'm having a problem. It's not how it works.
Right.
These people get treated and I take care of the providers and never the tween shall meet.
Right. Thank you for clarifying that with me and the audience. I'm sure that's just as important to union leaders, locally or nationally speaking, just as it is to me or any of us out there who are listening in Fed Up Nation. Now, in closing out the show here, Doc, is there anything else you like to share with the listeners out there that we perhaps didn't talk about here?
I just am interested in fulfilling my mission obligation and creating the largest, most efficient provider network for all injured federal patients. And it's going to happen. I'm just aligning myself with the locals and across all unions that understand what it is that we're trying to do. We're here to take care of the members first and foremost, and that's the only thing that matters. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only thing I want to touch upon one last time. It's what drives me every single day.
Gotcha. Well said. Again, well said. And if one of our listeners out here right now want to get a hold of you, and find out where the nearest FedHRT location is to them and look at the services you provide or even learn more about FedHRT or yourself for that matter, so that they can get the help they deserve and are entitled to, how can they do that? Is there a website they can look at or a phone number they can call?
Good question, Juan. There's a website. It's www.4FEDHURT.com. www.4fedhurt.com. Now, one thing I wanted to also add, I'll field questions for any injured federal worker, whether I have an office that I can place them in or not. Part of my obligation is to help all those that need help. And part of what has been part of my success is I take phone calls from all over the country. It doesn't matter to me whether or not you're going to be seen in one of my offices. And so if you have a question or need to discuss something, strategy or anything of that nature, OWCP related, and I can help, I certainly will.
Right. And what's that phone number again, Doc?
833-433-3487.
Got it. Thank you for sharing that with us. Dr. Cusson, I got to say here, it's been a pleasure. And this conversation was definitely an eye-opener for me. And I hope it was for the listeners out there as well, as it's refreshing to hear that us federal employees have yet another option here when it comes to seeking treatment and help for our on-the-job work injuries. Again, it's definitely been a pleasure to talk with you today. And again, thank you for your time, Doc. I appreciate it. And thank you for everything you do for us federal employees.
Pleasure's all mine.
For my listeners out there, I'm going to leave you with this. If you are struggling with an on-the-job work injury, just know that you are not alone. Many of us, just like you, have been or are currently going through it as well. And besides all of us sharing common issues related to the mistreatment from management, our agency, or even HR within our agency, which includes their unethical and at times even illegal behavior that is causing us issues, another top similar issue we all seem to deal with is finding a doctor to treat us who both understands and accepts federal work comp. Too many times we are met with a treating physician that says they accept federal work comp only to find out that they do not. They simply thought of us as a state work comp case, which is entirely different from federal work comp. Nonetheless, it hurts us and our case even more. How many times has your treating physician said that they will not write another narrative report because they feel what they wrote is enough for the medical narrative needed? I know for a fact this happens to a lot of you out there across this country. And quite frankly, some doctors just need to get their heads out of their asses, I feel. They get upset because they do not understand the language needed to get our claims accepted. Then when we get that denial letter from OWCP and inform them on what we need to get it accepted, they get upset with us. And that shouldn't be like that at all. How many times are federal employees, more importantly, how many times are you personally charged for a narrative report, but are not getting paid currently and more than likely haven't been getting paid for months and sometimes years in some cases? This happens way too often. Yet doctors are double dipping when they say they are only charging for their time needed to do a narrative, which again, in most cases, is done through a medical legal department or agency that works with the orthopedic or general surgeon doing your surgery. Or worse, that treating physician won't even write a damn narrative report, no matter how much is needed for you. All these things cause more obstacles for us, the injured federal employee, in an already broken and unjust system that we all have to go through when we are injured on the job. So doesn't it make sense to go somewhere that not only will get you the treatment needed and the attention you deserve, but to also have the peace of mind knowing that you will not be billed anything as the patient, zero cost to you. And you will have not only a care team for your treatment, but also a support team, more specifically, a claims manager, a case manager, if you will, to assist you with your claim, including paperwork from the beginning to end, including taking care of any and all medical narrative reports needed for your claim. Doesn't it make sense to go to a place that no matter what location you select, you will get the same treatment across the board, meaning how they treat you? I'm not talking about your medical treatment here, because the CEO is a doctor, first and foremost, instead of a businessman. Doesn't it make sense to go somewhere for treatment that both accept and understand federal work comp? You're damn right it does. And it makes all the difference in the world to us as federal employees. And believe me, I know, because I've been through a lot of the shit that most of you are going through or have gone through. That's why I do what I do. So just as I always preach to everyone out there, how important it is to educate ourselves, do our own research, put that knowledge to good practical use, be consistent and disciplined with all that. That same principle can be applied here when we get hurt on the job. Guys, listen, FedHurt is here for you. I need you to go check out FedHurt and see what they are all about for yourself. Now, y'all heard the conversation here today and how in-depth our conversation was with Dr. Kustin, and you even heard the passion in his voice when he was talking about certain issues that we all face and deal with. You heard me ask some good questions here and vet the good doctor and his company, FedHurt. Now it's your turn to do the same. Give them a call. Stop by for a visit at one of their many locations. Do your own due diligence and see for yourself what I now know, which is FedHurt is here for us federal employees from beginning to end, just as much as FedUp is here for you when you want your voices to be heard. Now, for more information again on FedHurt and see what they are all about and view their locations, you can go to their website at 4FedHurt.com. That's the number 4, FedHurt.com. Check them out. And if you want to give them a call, you can do that too, simply by calling them at the following number, which is 1-833-433-3487. Again, that's 1-833-433-3487. Now, to all federal union organizations out there, please understand that your members are having a tough time finding a doctor that can both accept and understand federal work comp, including the language and knowledge to navigate the system, and especially regarding that medical NADA report. Too many times, I hear MBAs or other leadership in the national union refer members who are injured on the job or tell local union presidents and OWCP reps or union stewards to let their members know that if they get hurt on the job and want to find a good OWCP provider, they can go look on the Department of Labor OWCP providers page and search for a doctor closest to them. What I need you all to know and understand here is a lot of those providers on there, they don't even accept federal work comp anymore, let alone even involved in the program. Why? Because it's too hard for them to do. That's why. And I know that the Department of Labor and OWCP are supposed to clean that all up and remove those that are no longer accepting federal work comp, right? Or want to be registered any longer. And I don't know if that was done just yet. I doubt it, though, as they're always behind, it seems, and saying what they're going to do. Still, I challenge someone right now, go to that provider page and select whatever page you want. Call just 10 doctors on that page and see how many actually still do federal work comp. Now, again, they may have addressed that issue again. I don't know. But regardless if they did or not, I still challenge any of you out there, call just 10 of those doctors and locations and see how many accept federal work comp still. I simply say all that to make this point here. Since a lot of you preach to use that provider portal, that search, if you will, through the Department of Labor and OWCP, you are obviously saying to use it because it means those providers are registered and accepted doctors to treat us, the federal employees. Well, FedHurt is one of those providers, and all their locations are registered and accepted providers to treat federal employees with their on-the-job work injuries. So if your brother or sister, that union member, has found a place to do both of those things and successfully help the members, does it not make sense to have a conversation with the provider, the doctor's office, that doctor, and vet them yourself? Reason being is not for your endorsement, but for you to see that they are there to help your members and all federal employees, for that matter, with their on-the-job work injuries, and share the same mission as you, which is to get the patient, that union member, back to work as soon as medically possible. FedHurt does just that. And for all management out there, listen, you already know what it is. Stop being part of the problem and start being part of the solution. When your employees get hurt, you should help get them back to work as soon as medically possible. Stop playing your damn games. Do you feel like a big shot when you purposely withhold a $24.99? That's a modified job assignment, limited duty, if you will, for those of you not an employee within the Postal Service or the federal sector, for that matter. But do you feel in control when you purposely lie when an employee reports a claim? For example, when you didn't go out and investigate that scene where someone was injured so you can make your own educated and well-informed decision on whether to controvert a claim or COP, that's continuation to pay, again, for those of you not familiar with the lingo here, but then you go and state why you were controverting that claim. Again, you didn't go out and investigate the scene. So how can you controvert that? Or how about when you willfully violate our contract, or worse, break the law by not following any CFRs. That's Code of Federal Regulation. Again, for those of you not familiar with the lingo, it's that unethical and illegal behavior that is causing hardships for us federal employees, not to mention making your job harder as well. I mean, I can go on and on with the mistreatment and discrimination, retaliation that you put injured workers through. But I'll say that for another episode. Believe that. And I will get really in depth with that episode as I will expose more of you, especially some HR personnel that shouldn't be in their position, let alone be getting any kind of promotion. But hey, that's the USPS way, right? Fuck up, move up, do dirt, get rewarded. No matter the cost, let's just screw the employee who got hurt on the job, right? What are you gaining from all this? Absolutely nothing. It's not only hurting the injured worker, but it's also hurting how effective and efficient your office can run. I want to remind you all, whether you are in the United States Postal Service or another agency, your agency exists for the sole purpose of providing a service. Instead, most of your managers out here are all about productivity. Well, how is screwing over your employees and creating a toxic and hostile environment with unethical and illegal behavior at the core of that toxic and hostile environment, helping either the service-oriented mission of that agency or even the productivity of your selfish needs, both of which, by the way, service and productivity are important for your office or area that you are responsible for. Again, how is that helping at all? It isn't. Period. Efficiency, effectiveness, work morale, all of it is sacrificed and cut down because of your own selfish needs and out of your own stupidity. Why do you think you all are referred to as stupidvisors or boss holes? That shit ain't no term of endearment, yet you wear that like a badge of honor. What the fuck is wrong with you all? Do you think you are somebody by doing all this? Who shit in your oatmeal? Who bullied you as a kid? Who mistreated you early on? Because honestly, I want to call them and bring them back into your lives so you can once again experience that wrongdoing or hardship that was caused for you from that person or those people. Because maybe then you'll see just how bad and ineffective you are as a manager. Maybe then you would change your ways and adopt new morals, values, ethics, and principles and actually follow contracts, policies, and procedures, and even the law itself. Maybe then you would stop drinking the Kool-Aid given to you by the agency higher-ups and those who trained you to screw over us, the federal employee. Maybe, just maybe, you'd start treating us as human beings again rather than just a number or a warm body. But we know that won't happen. So really, you got two choices here. Do the right thing and start treating your employees with dignity and respect, or continue on that path you are on. But if you select the second option here, just know and understand that I will not stop doing what I do to expose you to the world. And listen, I know there are managers out there who listen to my podcast. And right now, some of you are laughing to yourselves because you are the very person who I'm speaking of. And that's fine. Just know that karma eventually catches up to all of us. And it is us, the federal employees who you have repeatedly screwed over, we are the ones who had the last laugh. And trust me when I say this, you will be named personally. And it just isn't management out there. I'm talking to you in HR. You know who you are. You still fucking with people who are out on an injury. You still sending them threatening letters, making those threatening phone calls, going out of your way to make their lives a living hell, knowing damn well there ain't a damn thing you can do because this person is out on an injury and has an approved claim with the accepted conditions that you know nothing of, yet you still want to play doctor like you got a medical degree. Your time will come. Believe that. And since you want to play doctor, shit, I'm going to be a journalist. And notice how I said be and not play, because I don't play when it comes to seeking justice. But I will expose all of that unethical and illegal behavior you are continuously dishing out to everyone in your district. Make no mistake about it. There will be accountability and discipline for your actions. And it's a shame I got to say this, but we all know how you like to play victim or cry violence or harassment and then call the cops on people when you feel quote unquote unsafe. So I'm going to be loud and clear here. Even though I don't work for y'all no more, I just want to say that this isn't any threat of any kind. It's simply just the facts here that we will continue to do our part to fight back and expose what is really going on from within our agency, more specifically, your actions. So again, laugh all you want right now, because at the finish line, no matter how long it takes, and believe me, I'm going to take my time with this episode, but when it comes out, whether it's next week, next month, in a few months, whenever it comes out, that episode will be the beginning of your end with regards to mistreating us federal employees and the position you currently hold. And your laughter will be replaced with tears or maybe anger. But whatever it is, I guarantee you it won't be laughter anymore. But just know that I know and see you for who and what you are and represent. And it won't be long before the world knows as well, including your name. It shouldn't have to be like this. We should be working together, but we know how HR is just another level, another department to help mitigate the risk for the agency from the inside so it doesn't get leaked out. Well, here we are, and it's still going to get leaked out everywhere. What is really going on? You all forced our hand here. And don't you dare give us that conduct unbecoming bullshit either. Because we are in this position because your conduct is unbecoming. And again, not only that, but your behavior is also willfully unethical and illegal. But don't blame us for your wrongdoings when karma catches up to you. Because you won't get any sympathy or compassion from us, especially from those of us that you cause even more hardships for. This all falls on you. So if you don't want to be named like some will be here on Fed Up, then start fostering a culture that revolves around structure, discipline, accountability, and integrity rather than the toxic and hostile culture you have been and are currently creating and or tolerating, which, by the way, erodes work morale and also undermines productivity. Start prioritizing these values and principles to create a workplace where everyone can thrive. Stop being unethical and follow the law and policies and procedures. And remember, leadership isn't about power. It's about service, stewardship, and setting the example for others to follow. So why not build a new management regime by leading with integrity and compassion and cultivate a culture of dignity and respect? Because it's clear that the way you've been doing things just really ain't getting it done. But again, if you continue on this path of unethical and illegal behavior, then we will continue to call you out and put you on blast. All we want is to be treated fairly and like a human being with dignity and respect, and to be able to come to work without worrying about workplace harassment, violence, and or bullying. It's that simple.
That about does it here for us at Fed Up. Please don't forget to like, follow, and share this podcast. And if you are fed up like everyone else is and want to share your story and experiences, your issues and frustrations, and want your voice to be heard, I invite you to be a guest on this show. There's strength in numbers, and together, by sharing our stories, we can and will make the change that is needed. Just send me an email at one.fedup.podcast@gmail.com. Again, that's the number 1.fedup.podcast@gmail.com, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Again, thanks for tuning in. Until next time, stay safe out there, my friends. Shit.